Later, they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to Jesus to catch him in his words. They came to him and said, "Teacher, we know that you're a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Is it right to pay the poll tax to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we?" But Jesus knew their hypocrisy. "Why are you trying to trap me?" he asked. "Bring me a denarius and let me look at it." They brought the coin and he asked them, "Whose image is this and whose inscription?" "Caesar's," they replied. Then Jesus said to them, "Give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's." And they were amazed at him.
Thank you, Claire. And please, could you keep that passage open in front of you as we look at it over the next few minutes and consider this topic of how much should we give? And as Claire read there, the passage ends with the words, "and they were amazed at him." Throughout his whole ministry, Jesus had the power to amaze people. And right at the beginning of the Gospel of Mark that we've turned to today, we find out that Jesus entered a synagogue in Capernaum and he began to teach. And we read that the people were amazed at his authority, at his teaching. And yet they say, "For he has taught us as one who had authority and not as the teachers of the law." And that same occasion, he drives out an evil spirit from a man who's in the synagogue and he's possessed by the spirit. And again, we read how the people were so amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching?" And with authority, he even gives orders to the evil spirits and they obey him. So from those beginnings until the end, Jesus amazed people by the authority by which he spoke, by the authority he had over evil spirits, over sickness, for he healed many people over the course of his years on earth. His authority over the natural world, indeed. The power and the respect he commanded was unknown in a person before. But this was threatening the religious leaders of the time. They saw themselves as being the true authorities, the upholders of the truth, the ones to be respected and obeyed, the pillars of the church, as we might call them today. Who was this upstart who had come from nowhere? Well, from Nazareth, actually, who was upsetting everything. So in the passage that we looked at last week, if you were here, and in today's reading, things are coming to a bit of a head. Jesus is in Jerusalem, as we were reflecting, and this being Palm Sunday today. And it's the Tuesday before the Good Friday, when the events that we're reading about are unfolding. The chief priests and the elders and the teachers of the law, having opposed Jesus almost from the beginning, are making more and more effort to find ways to rid the threat that Jesus posed and to get rid of Jesus himself. Last week we saw how they openly challenged Jesus about his authority. "He who gave you authority to do this?" they asked. And Jesus then told the parable of the tenants against his opponents, and this really incensed them, but they couldn't arrest him for fear of the crowd who continued to be amazed by Jesus and by his teaching. But here they come again in today's passage. So let's take a closer look at what's going on here and be ready to be amazed by Jesus ourselves and the truth he taught and his authority. So if you'd like to read with me verse 13. "Later they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to Jesus to catch him out." Now this is interesting in itself because the Pharisees and Herodians weren't natural allies, but quite the opposite. They were political opponents. The Pharisees were the Jewish legal experts and rabbis who were intensely observant of the Jewish law and fiercely nationalistic, opposing Roman rule. Whilst the Herodians were Jews who favoured the Herodian dynasty and therefore supporters of Rome from whom the Herods received their authority. The only thing that would bring together these two groups of people, the Pharisees and the Herodians, was a higher cause, that of dealing with the threat of Jesus, which both groups could recognize. Maybe this is a bit like us recently witnessing our Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition after months of a public mutual opposition and criticism coming together at the table to talk. They'd been calling each other unfit for office, unfit for government, but there they were actually talking together around the table because a crisis point was trumping their very deep divisions and forcing them to cooperate. So maybe it was a bit like that with these two groups of people, the Pharisees and the Herodians. And they came to Jesus to trap him in his words, as we read, to catch him out, and with flattery too. So if we just read verse 14 and the first part of verse 15. They came to him and said, "Teacher, we know you are a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. But you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we?" Now, if someone asked us whether it was right to pay taxes, we'd be a bit puzzled, I think, wouldn't we? Well, of course it is. How else would the government pay for its education or its roads, the justice system, or whatever it is? It might be controversial how much tax we pay, but not whether we should pay for most people. But the problem that the Jews had was not with paying the usual local taxes or temple taxes, but on top of this, having to pay a kind of poll tax to the Roman emperor. This is sometimes called tribute money and was common in the international fairs of the biblical times, a conquered state being required to pay a yearly tax to the conquerors as a means to impoverish them, to keep them in check, whilst increasing the conqueror's own revenue and power. A non-payment would be seen as rebellion and dealt with very swiftly and harshly. And this was the situation of the Jews, and it was especially hard as they believed that their destiny was to be God's free people. But ever since the Babylonian invasion some 500 years before, this hadn't been the case. They had been under foreign rule, lastly under the Romans. The Roman taxes were therefore hateful to the Jews because it was a sign of their defeat, their subjugation. So this is why it was a difficult issue for the Jews. But nevertheless, the question is not a genuine one. They are trying to corner Jesus on this issue. If Jesus said, "Refuse the tax," the Herodians could report him to the governor, Pontius Pilate, and he could be found guilty of the capital charge of inciting revolt. If he said, "Pay the tax," on the other hand, he would, in the eyes of the Pharisees, alienate the crowds and lose popular support. Reading on from the second part of verse 15, "But Jesus knew their hypocrisy. 'Why are you trying to trap me?' he asked. 'Bring me a denarius and let me look at it.' And they brought the coin, and he asked them, 'Whose portrait is this, and whose inscription?' 'Caesar's,' they replied." Now, this is a picture of such a coin, a denarius, or tribute penny, as it's sometimes called, and it, in wide circulation at the time. And this coin was offensive to the Jews. For one thing, the Jews were forbidden to make carved images, especially of people. And here was a coin bearing the image of Tiberius Caesar staring them in the face. But worse, the inscription reads on one side of the coin, "Augustus Tiberius, son of the divine Augustus." And on the other side, "High priest." For the Roman emperors were considered to be high priests of the Roman religion or cult. So there we have it on the one side, son of the divine Augustus, or son of God in effect, and on the other side of the coin, high priest. And what could be more blasphemous to the Jews, such a claim? Now, those among us who follow football, with Andy not here, somebody has to make some sort of a football analogy. You'll probably notice that Old Trafford hosted Barcelona midweek, this Champions League quarter-final. And frankly, Barcelona rather dominated the game. And I was kind of imagining a journalist after that match interviewing a diehard Man United supporter and handing him a Barcelona scarf, perhaps a bit like this one, and asking him to describe it, to describe what's on it. So there are the big letters FC Barcelona, read boldly on one side, and there's the shield of the club. There's the St. George's cross, which is apparently the patron saint of Catalonia, and also the Catalonian flag. And then on the other side of the scarf, that same proud shield, there would be those five letters spelling out the word Messi, which would say it all, their famous game maker and winner. But for someone still holding on to the idea of their team, Manchester United being the greatest, despite little evidence of that for that particular night, this scarf would have been a really offensive object to handle and to have to talk about. And that's kind of, for me, a bit of a picture of what it would have been like for the Pharisees holding this denarius, this tribute penny. And having asked them to produce a coin and got them to say what it showed, we come to the famous words of Jesus in answer to the question of, is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or is it not? So verse 17, then Jesus said to them, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. So importantly, what is Jesus saying here? Let's have some minutes to think about that. Some have tried to argue from Jesus' words that we should divide our lives into a religious part and a political or social part. And in fact, such ideas did gain quite a lot of ground in this country, for example, a couple of hundred years ago. But this isn't what Jesus is wanting to talk about here. Others have tried to develop a theology about religion and society, or church and state. But this almost certainly is going too far as well from these few words of Jesus. But instead, I suggest Jesus is giving us some clear messages about authority and about giving. And I'd like to look at the two halves of what he says in turn. So firstly, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's. And I guess the first thing to say about this is that Jesus is managing to skillfully avoid that trap that was being set for him. Even though the question was about paying taxes, Jesus answers in terms of paying back or giving back. That's what the Greek word actually means. And it's a subtle but I think important difference. The coin has Caesar's image on it. Give it back to where it belongs. The Jewish people did benefit from the rule of Rome, the stability of government, the relative peace, the Roman roads, the rule of law. Those who enjoyed those benefits from Rome should give something back to Rome. It kind of makes sense. In other words, pay taxes. It is right to submit in this way to worldly authorities, to governments. And that's actually consistent with teaching we receive from elsewhere in the Bible, particularly Paul's words in his letter to the church in Rome some 25 or so years later. In chapter 13 of that book, we read in verses 1 and 2, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. And then a little later, in verses 6 and 7, he continues, this is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give to everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. So even under foreign rule and oppression, this can be true. God, much earlier, spoke through the prophet Jeremiah to the people of Jerusalem who had been captured by the Babylonians and sent off into exile about 500 or so years before Christ. And God, through Jeremiah, told the people to live peacefully and seek prosperity in the land of their exile, to settle down, to start families, Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper, were the words of God through Jeremiah. And that probably meant paying taxes too. So even under oppression or political calamity, the truth is that all worldly authorities are established and allowed by God. We should give to them what we owe them, but importantly, stop short of giving them the adulation, the wholehearted allegiance and worship that only God deserves. And in highlighting the blasphemous words on the tribute penny, the divine Augustus, for example, there is perhaps also a contemptuous note to Jesus' command, send this back where it came from. Certainly do not accept that this earthly rule or ruler can be in any sense divine. So in this double sense of, yes, pay the tax, but no, don't acknowledge Caesar as deserving of your worship, Jesus is managing to escape the charge of either encouraging revolt or siding with the Romans. But then Jesus goes on, give back to God what is God's. Submitting to the authority of the Roman rulers and paying back what was owed to them was one thing, but how much more important is it to give back what is rightfully God's? And there are three ways in which this can be understood. Firstly, we are entrusted with what God has made. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, says the psalmist. And that's clear from the Genesis account of the origins of the world. In the very first verse of the Bible, we read, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the account then goes on to describe all that he made over the 6 days of creation, culminating in the passage that Mark read earlier. Everything that we have in life is of God and a gift of God. God's provision to us and entrusted to us for a time to look after, but not forever. Our lives do not consist of the abundance of our possessions, Jesus once said. And he went on to tell the parable of the rich farmer recorded in Luke's gospel. Rachel and I love to read Nick Butterworth and Mick Inkpen's version, children's version of this story to Ben and Rosie when they were very small. So this farmer's harvest was so good that he decided to pull down his old barns and build bigger and better ones so that he could store up his mountain of grain and then take life easy and eat, drink and be merry. But as you may remember from this parable, as soon as he has built his new barns, his life is suddenly taken away, tragically. And Jesus says, this is how it will be for anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich towards God. We are encouraged to store treasure in heaven, not on earth. And part of the way to do that is to be generous with all that we own, making choices about it that lead to blessing others and honouring God to whom we owe all things. But the comparison Jesus makes with the tribute penny to be paid back to Caesar is drawing us to a second level of meaning. The tax money bore Caesar's image. Pay it back to him. What is it that bears God's image that therefore should be paid back to God? Well, according to the Genesis account that we read earlier, God creating people, men and women, It is us that bear God's image. So just reading again a couple of verses from that passage, verses 26 and 27. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. That is a very humbling thing, that of all of God's handiwork, it is us that have been made in his likeness, who bear that image of God, like the coin bearing Caesar's profile. And in bearing that image, we are also given very special responsibility in terms of ruling over the world that God has made as well. We owe our life and breath to him. We are his in the sense that all humankind were, in his great design, meant to belong to him, to live our lives under his gaze and be in that full relationship with him. Not that it worked out like that with our sinfulness and our rebellion. We still bear that image, have that capacity for love and goodness, but it is one that has lost its sheen. And I was thinking that maybe it's a bit like this old coin, rather misshapen, tarnished, that image rather fainter than it should be. And that leads us to the third way in which I think Jesus' words can be understood when he says, give back to God what is God's. Through his saving work, redeeming a people for himself at a great cost to himself. The book of Revelation gives a wonderful prophetic picture of a worshipping group of creatures and elders before the slain Lamb of God, in other words, Jesus, singing a song that went, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, because you were slain, and with your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people and nation." Jesus' blood was the means by which God bought back a people for himself. Those who put their trust in that saving work are purchased, belonging to him, and that very deep meaning. And Paul in his letters also explains this. For example, from his first letter to the Corinthian church, he says, "You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies." As he put it in his letter to the Galatians, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law. And that's sometimes translated, Christ bought us with his blood. The idea of being a people purchased by God runs throughout history, of the Old Testament times too. As the psalmist proclaimed many years earlier, "Remember the nation you purchased long ago, the people of your inheritance whom you redeemed." So after the fall, the human rebellion, it was always God's plan to redeem, buy back a people for himself, at great cost to himself. Receiving his righteousness, we will be transformed into his perfect likeness. Which is a work in progress, of course, as until Jesus returns, people who trust in him are saved, but not yet sanctified in the sense of being made perfect. And I imagine this being like that coin again, if we can picture that, the face of which still looks tarnished and worn, misshapen. But then when you flip over the coin, the other face is brand new. It's perfectly round. The image of God is in sharp relief and shining bright. And inscribed are the words, "Redeemed by Christ." We are not wholly there yet, but our destiny is one day to be like that newly minted coin. The people were amazed at Jesus, it says in verse 17 at the end of our passage we've been looking at. And no wonder, he had just given the right answer to a wrong question. Jesus gave an answer of life-giving possibility and good intent to a question made with much malintent. And unfortunately the world, and sometimes even the church, is full of quite sterile questions. That of the Jews was an example. Who should we pay? Should we give 10% of this, 30% of that? But instead of the question of how much should we give, ought to be the exclamation, how much we should give. We need to ask, what does it mean to give 100% of ourselves, to be wholeheartedly living for God, bringing him into our decision-making, every relationship, how we use our hands, where our feet takes us, where our attempts at obedience to all his word, our fulfillment of the greatest command to love God with all our hearts, souls, and minds, and the second greatest one about loving our neighbours as ourselves. In answer to this question of wholehearted giving of ourselves, some people will become missionaries abroad, others will give themselves to public service in this country, to a homelessness charity perhaps, to caring for dependents, whether young or old, to many different voluntary ministries in the church, or to full-time work within the church. There are so many different ways to work this out, as many as there are people, but God will show us the way. The chief priests and the teachers and elders had earlier asked him, "Who gave you the authority to do these things?" They were feeling their own authority was being undermined, and they asked a question about a Roman authority to try and trap Jesus. But it's God's authority we should ultimately care about. In the story before us, we have the small, inanimate coin, the denarius, with Caesar's face and words that gave claim to him being a son of a divine being, being handed to Jesus, who was that one true Son of God. A Roman Empire, seemingly indestructible, but only to last another few hundred years, in a sense next door to Jesus, representing the kingdom of God that is to last forever. So what a contrast, and how blind were those scheming religious experts, and how blind we can also be when our focus on the small things interrupts our view of the eternal, the authority in this world that really matters. So in finishing, I'd like to say, let's make it our prayer that we can be amazed this week, as we read that the people were in our passage, as we contemplate God's story, what Jesus did on the cross for us, and that in being amazed, we might know how to give all of ourselves in service to him.